2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Welcome to the Taco Tuesday PGA DFS podcast presented to you by DFSArmy.com. If you're a fan of the content provided today and you want to come check out our premium tools, be sure to head on over to DFSArmy.com using the link in the description, and you can use promo code TACO to sign up and get a lifetime 20% off. This week I'm introducing a few new pretty excellent tools. I've added an overall metric to summarize recent form, course history, and course fit for each of the golfers out there. We've got our ownership projections up live for both FanDuel and DraftKings. The Domination Station is finally back up to date. FanDuel is working on there with their new salary cap format of $60,000 and six golfers, just like DraftKings. And I've finally put out the Stat Cruncher, which takes all of the anything possible into account, be it your odds, form, course history, driving distance accuracy, greens and regulation, all of the field-adjusted statistics that are going to be a lot better than the statistics most people are using, as they are weighted recently going back the last 3, 6, and 9 months. Instead of just using, you know, this year's numbers that have like 3 or 4 tournaments worth of data for people, or using last year's numbers, which haven't been updated in like 3 or 4 months at this point. And even combining them together doesn't work out that well, but with the field-adjusted statistics, we're able to have a very good sample size for almost everyone in the field outside of some of the newer guys, and it will warn you when the sample is pretty low on a guy. But the Stat Cruncher is something I've been working on since 2015 and have put out every now and again, just have been working out the kinks with it. But you can try it this week, set the numbers to anything that you would like, and it'll all add up to come out with a score that shows pretty much how good that person is at all of the metrics that you have defined and how important they all are to you. So it's a very awesome tool that'll auto-populate itself in the research station, so you can keep track of their Stat Cruncher score along with the other metrics like the form, history, efficiency scoring, all the awesome metrics that come with a DFS Army premium subscription. So come check us out. Let's get into the field here. We are at Wailailai Country Club in Hawaii for the Sony Open. It is the first full field event, and very excited for this. Last week was just a no-cut event with a very reduced field. This is a full field of 139 golfers. So the strategy is quite a bit different than last week. We do have to worry about people missing the cut. I've got a lot more of your scrub golfers, since obviously you had to win an event to make the event last week. And you see a lot more of these super scrubs around 300, 400, 500 to 1. Who, for the most part, probably won't have any real chance of making the cut or doing anything. But nonetheless, it's going to be fun. We've got Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas as the studs of the slate. And then a moderately strong field, kind of similar to how we usually see the Sony Open. A lot of names that come here year to year. And while we're still in Hawaii as much as last week, it's quite a different course. If we look at the course setup, last week we had tons of par fours, but they were mostly either under 400 yards or above 500 yards. We only have a couple par four holes that are under 400 yards, but we have 10 of them between 400 and 500 yards. That's where we're going to get a lot of our scoring at. It is a par 70, so you've got plenty of par 3s. four par threes, and they mostly range in between 175 and 200 yards. And they are the toughest holes on the course. Only two par fives, and they both range between 500 and 600 yards. And they are in play for everybody to hit on there in two holes. In fact, the ninth hole, the 506-yard par five, was the second easiest hole in all the PGA Tour last season, with 48 eagles, 274 birdies made, 112 pars, and only 15 bogeys. No scores worse than double bogey on that hole. That is an extremely easy hole. And that kind of takes away a lot of the value that you're going to have from your par 5 scores. We can pretty much consider this a birdie for mostly everybody. And really, your good ball strikers have just as much of a chance of getting an eagle as your long bombers. Bombers have no real significant advantage on this course whatsoever, as the short par 4s are not going to be drivable. We aren't going to have those crazy elevated tees and 400 and some yard shots on a par 4 for a hole-in-one like DJ almost had last week. That was just an incredible showing by DJ, winning by 8 strokes or whatnot. He's not in the field. But getting back to the course here, it's a very easy course. Averages about a stroke and a half under par. It comes in as one of the 10 easiest courses on tour. We see very, very few double bogeys. It ranked fourth in double bogey avoidance and also ranked third in eagles. So eagles are coming aplenty, and they're coming to everybody. You don't really have to have that distance for eagles, and that's why driving distance is a non-factor in the statistical cruncher. I've preset it to a zero on driving distance, since it doesn't really help you as much as it did last week. The fairways are a lot tighter than last week, obviously. No course is going to have fairways like that again. It does give you a little bit of an advantage if you can carry the ball 300-some yards, but no one's really going to be able to do that. They're all pretty... they're about 30 yards wide, just average, compared to your average PGA course. Although, it is hard to stay on these fairways, as the driving accuracy percentage comes in at about 51%. But it's very easy to scramble out of the rough, so it's not that big of a deal if you miss the fairway. We saw a 66% green in regulation mark. And usually driving distance or driving accuracy and greens and regulation are a bit closer than that, but we can tell that this is a very, very easy course to scramble out of with the low driving accuracy percentage, but with a high 66% green and regulation percentage. But the challenging this part of this course would be the greens. They are fairly large greens with a stimp meter coming in at about 11.5, which is, it's fairly easy, but these Bermuda grass greens can be a little bit tricky. It's one of the only parts of the course that really is, or can be tricky, and we've seen a lot of good putters do well here, so I am looking at putting quite a bit as one of the key stats for the course, along with strokes gained approach. Since strokes gained off the tee isn't going to matter as much this week, strokes gained approach naturally just kind of comes in as the primo stat that you're going to want to take advantage of. As for strokes gains around the green, when you're hitting half of your approach shots out of the rough, it will be helpful, but if you're a terrible scrambler, it looks like you get bailed out a little bit this week, so it's not quite as important. I'm mostly looking at approach and putting for this course. And let's just dive right into the players here. Up top, we've got Jordan Spieth at 6-1. You can tell how kind of a weak field this is the farther you go down, because these were Spieth's odds last week in like a 35 person event, and we're at a 130 person event. His odds are still 6-1, so it's not quite as top heavy as last week when you had DJ Ron Matsuyama out there. But Spieth and Thomas are the clear favorites here. Thomas is the defending champion, but you had Spieth follow up right behind him, coming in at T3. Or I think he was solo third, actually, last year. But nonetheless, he's going to be the chalk again. He finished ninth last week at the Tournament of Champions. And, you know, if you're just looking at people's recent form logs on DraftKings or whatever, you'll see Spieth come up with a ninth and a third. And if you've been playing PGA DFS for a while and you just see, you know, a 9 and a 3 on there, that looks pretty good. But when you consider the fact that they were fields of 34 and 18 golfers, suddenly a 9th and a 3rd doesn't become all that great. And other than that, he's, you know, just coming off a pretty big layoff. But he's still Jordan Spieth. He has everything that you need for this course. If you're punting strokes gained approach, or strokes gained off the green, like I pretty much am this week, then if you look at everything else, like it just all points to Jordan Spieth. You know, Thomas is huge off of the tee. Spieth is just average at distance and accuracy, but his greens regulation, his approach game for sure, and his around the green birdie or better percentage, they're all great. All the numbers are just excellent. He's number one in the field in course fit. And you know he's a great putter. Spieth has always made a living with his putter. That's what's made him a number one caliber player in the world. And if you want to go ahead and fade Spieth for ownership, that makes sense enough. I mean, he's 12,000 on DraftKings, 12,800 on FanDuel, most expensive on both sites, edging out Justin Thomas. I mean, it's pretty obvious what's going on there. I think that you can definitely pay for him with a lot of the value down low, but I don't. His ownership isn't going to be 30, 40% like last week, obviously, with the field being a lot larger. So while he is going to be chalky, this chalk is going to come out to around 20 to 24%, around that range. That's what we have him projected at right now. And compare that to Justin Thomas, who we have plugged in at around 15%. If you're going to go with the contrarian angle here, might as well go with the defending champ, Justin Thomas. And if you're in a GPP, I think that's honestly the way to go. In cash games, I'd definitely lean more towards Spieth or really just skip the expensive guys altogether and have more of a balanced approach. But I could definitely see the case for Spieth, and I can see the case against Spieth as well. If you're just if you're valuing course fit a lot in statistical measures, he is the guy. He ranks highly on efficiency scoring. He is second best in the field in that regard as well. So all signs point to Mr. Spieth, but you're not going to be alone if you take him. If you go to Justin Thomas here, he's not as good of a course fit. He has pretty poor driving accuracy, but he makes up for it a lot with his other measures, approach, around the green, birdie or better percentage. It looks pretty similar to Spieth in that regard, just the numbers aren't quite as high, especially in greens and regulation. And his distance won't give him quite the advantage that he's used to week, but he is the defending champion here, and he can absolutely strike at any time. We just saw him win the CJ Cup a few months ago. He had a bad week last week, finishing 22nd. Out of 34 golfers. He came on strong in the final round, so I'm not too worried about him, really. But he did have a pretty crappy start to the tournament last week and screwed over anyone who took him in GPP, like this guy. But nonetheless, I could see a lot of people just not being huge on Thomas this week. His ownership's going to be maybe half of Spieth's, and that's reason enough to play him. He's 8-1 to Spieth's 6-1. It's not that big of a difference. So I have no problem whatsoever if you want to get back on him in GPP, but obviously avoid that in cash. A very popular name this week is going to be Mr. Mark Leishman. He was leading the tournament for a good amount of time last week, ended up falling back into 7th place, but the guy has been a beast ever since the FedEx Cup. Came second at that CJ Cup. He's just been on fire. His career is not, I think he's better than he has been any point in his career. He is just excellent. He's going into a course that he has had tons of success at. He has yet to miss the cut here. Finished 5th in 2014, 9th in 2013, 20th last year. He pretty much always finishes top 30. Only one finish in his last 9 tries, or 8 tries. Only one finish in his last 8 tries has been below top 30, and that was a T37 in 2015. So, if you're a big course history guy, load up on your Mark Leishman. You just have to pay a pretty penny for him. $1,100 on DraftKings, $11,400 on FanDuel. He comes in as one of the few players on the slate with an excellent recent form, course history, and course fit. His strokes gained approach is edging out Jordan Spieth as one of the best in the entire field, especially of the people that have a very large sample like he does. His approach game is consistently solid, very good to green to regulation, obviously very good at birdie or better percentage. His recent birdie or better percentage has been astonishingly high. We saw that on full display last week. So, you know, Leishman is a guy that I always put in my cash game every single week, helped carry my cash team last week. He's going to be kind of expensive to do that again. I'm probably going to keep playing him in my cash lineup just because I just always play him. I'll just have to pay for it for sure. And it will mean having to fade the likes of Spieth, Thomas, Brian Harman, who we're going to get into, and possibly even a Zach Johnson. But it's not finalized yet. You can still kind of squeeze him in there. He just costs so much, but he is one of the safest guys in the entire field when it comes to making the cut here, and he should be able to do that again for you and possibly put up another top 10 finish. Brian Harman has done nothing but top 10 finishes this year. If you are just looking at game logs, then you lock in Brian Harman no matter what. His 4 finishes on the season so far, 3rd, 4th, 8th, and 5th. His form, better than anyone in the field, obviously, with that. And his course fit is great. This is the kind of course that Harman succeeds at. You know, I wasn't big on his course fit last week, but this week it's great. He's not long off the tee, but that's fine. He's accurate, a very good putter, and his numbers haven't been that great as far as approach and birdie or better percentage overall, but recently those numbers have been quite strong. So, with him being 10,600 on DraftKings, 11,300 on FanDuel, that is easily the most expensive he's ever been. And Harman has been a guy to put up top 10 finishes and then follow them up with like big miscuts. So GPP only for sure, even though he seems like a cash safe guy. I don't think Harman is ever anyone that I would play in cash, but I mean, he's got fairly good course history here. Top 20s in his last 3 times out. Although in 2012 and 2013, his first few times playing it, he was not good at all. But that was a while ago. Harman, there's nothing really wrong with playing him in GPP. He has that upside. I just don't see a lot of people doing it unless they're game logging. So if you want to get off of that for that reason, that's no problem whatsoever. Going on to Kevin Kisner, 10-1, 11-7 on FanDuel. Very expensive on FanDuel. He ranks number 1 in our efficiency scoring projections. And to see why that's the case, he is just excellent at par 4 scoring. 400 to 450, 450 to 500 yards. Just great at both of those. And that's the bread and butter of this course. That's where 10 of the 18 holes are at. And he's finished top 5 the last few years. I never made the cut outside of that. 3 missed cuts before that 4th and 5th in the last few years. But he's shown that top 10 upside recently, finishing 4th at the RSM Classic. He did not look that great last week at the Tournament of Champions, just finishing T17. But he started off hot and kind of went backwards a little bit. Actually, I think he had a kind of a poor first round, and then started turning on the second and third round, or I think it was the second round. Yeah, he went pretty low, but he's very expensive. Definitely on FanDuel, he's like pretty much in a void because he's way overpriced. On DraftKings, I don't think he'll be that popular, obviously, with Harman, Leishman, Zach Johnson around him. So in GPP, I'm all about it. That efficiency scoring metric is key. So I really like him there. I just can't pull the trigger in cash, obviously. I'd rather go Leishman or Zach Johnson. And, yeah, I keep bringing up Zach Johnson. This is a guy that we need to talk about here. $9,500 on FanDuel, $9,500 on DraftKings, $10,500 on FanDuel. He's been in good form, finishing 8th at the RSM Classic, 28th at the OHL, and 13th at the Safeway Open back in, like, October. Former winner of this event. Four top 10 finishes in the last decade here, including three since 2014. That includes a sixth place finish last year, ninth place finish the year before that. Very good at this course. This is the kind of course where you want to play your Zach Johnsons at. I wouldn't say it's an accuracy course per se, but it's one where distance doesn't matter, and that's always been by far the worst part of his game. He is an excellent putter, always has been. His recent putting metrics are fantastic, and he's going to keep it out of trouble. That's just what he does. He's going to be very popular in cash games, probably a solid foundation for any cash game that you can think of. He's going to be very popular in those, probably about 50 to 60% owned. So I don't really recommend fading cash game guys for ownership, but him and a certain guy that we're going to get into later are going to be just so owned in cash that you may actually consider it, because anyone could have a bad tournament. It's just really hard to see Zach Johnson having a bad tournament here when this everything that this course demands is what he's good at. And with par fives and eagles being really mitigated at this course, this is a place where he can come in and shine for sure, but at a cost of ownership, pretty high ownership. Webb Simpson, last time we saw him, he was very chalky at the RSM Classic and withdrew on everybody on Thursday. But it was to go see his ailing father. Had nothing to do with injury or anything, so don't worry about that. Other than that, he's been great, really, the last year or so. He's been fantastic, and he doesn't miss the cut here. He hasn't. Honestly, the trends are telling us he's going to finish T13. In 2017, he finished T13. In 2016, he finished T13. In 2015, he finished T13. So I think that he's kind of trending, not upwards, not downwards. He's just trending. And a T13 would be an excellent outcome here. I don't think that happens, obviously, but I think he could pull a top five finish for sure. I don't think he has the winning upside. He never really does. I know he's won a major and all that, but he tends to go to a playoff and lose. That's more of his MO, and I'd be okay with that too. And if you could tell me that his ownership is under like 15% or even under 10%, I'd be all about it. But we'll have to see if other people are on Webb Simpson, which I think might be the case. I think other people are going to, at least other touts in the industry are going to be mentioning his name as a pivot off of Zach Johnson. If you just left it up to the field, I think most people would gravitate towards ZJ. Right underneath him is a guy who's going to go very underlooked. By far the lowest ownership percentage projection of anyone 9,000 and up. That's Russell Henley, former winner here. Won his first time out. And tied with Simpson and Harmon with a T13 last year. Did not look great at the Tournament of Champions. Really hasn't had any like high upside finishes. He's been, you know, just a streaky guy. Nothing really sticks out as far as, course fit for him and stats. He is a guy he's usually more accurate than he is long, but he's not that great at anything, really. His approach numbers are just average. Putting, just average. Usually he's a better putter than the stats show, but right now he's just coming in at, like, dead average. So I don't know why he's priced so high on both sides, really. Another guy that's priced way too high, Cameron Smith. I know he was super chalk last week, about 34% owned in GPP, coming off of that win at the Australian Masters, or I think it's the Australian PGA. Yeah, the Australian PGA, and the third at the CJ Cup, and fifth at the CIMB. Ended up finishing T17 after starting just miserably. Started terribly, like almost dead last, if it wasn't for Koepka, who's obviously injured. But he ended up turning it around the last three rounds. I think he posted them all under par, worked back to a T17 finish. He's just too expensive. He should have been this price last week. So not very enthusiastic about him, but I'd definitely play him more over on FanDuel at 9,300. Underneath Smith, you've got a few guys that are going to be very popular. We'll start with a fan favorite in Tony Finau, who is in very good form, but outside of last year's finish, has never done anything on this course well whatsoever. Finished T20 last year, but before that, miscut, T64. Yikes, that's pretty bad, but I'm not really worried about it. Finau is a much better golfer. I know he is a power guy, and that doesn't really help you much here. And other than that, he's kind of eh, but very good at getting birdies, good approach game, and just very consistent. His recent finish is 16th, 11th, 26th, 2nd at the Safeway Open. And if you just look back even longer than that, he's been on a roll, really. He's made a lot of cuts, and that's why he's become a fan favorite. He's going to come in with some ownership, but not as much ownership as you'd see on a normal week. And that is because of the next guy on the list who we're going to get into here soon. Tony Finau, 8,900 on DraftKings. I'm probably going to be using a fair amount of him just because since he's come on tour, he really has played better early in the season than later in the season. Granted, the next guy we're about to talk to is like the pinnacle of that, but I just like Finau's game. I know the field's going to be on him, and I kind of don't want to be underweight. He's a guy I do believe in a lot. He has good Vegas odds compared to pricing. And I've got to play him on DraftKings because you can't play him on FanDuel. He's 11,000. That is way too expensive. I'd definitely rather play Cameron Smith for like 2,000 less there, but or even the next guy for 1,000 less. So, like Finau a lot, let's name this guy I keep talking about. Mr. Charles Howell III, Chucky 3 Sticks, CH3, aka the man at this course. You're going to hear that a lot throughout the next several months. Just know the name, Charles Howell III. He has a very precise MO. He does the same thing every year. He'll make the first like 15 cuts on the season, like every time, and then just play like crap. He makes his money in the winter through the spring, maybe into the summer, right around the Texas swing. That's when he calls it a year and just stops showing up to tournaments pretty much. If you look back last year, made almost every single cut, even almost won a tournament. I can't remember which one it was, but he had a solid T2 finish. I just remember playing like 90% CH3. He just has so many of these courses where he doesn't miss the cut ever. He's like the course history guy. And this is one of those courses. He has missed the cut here once in 2011. Other than that, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 top 13 finishes. And I know I'm just saying that to squeeze the 13 in there. So if you get rid of that one, since 2009, he has 6 top 10 finishes here, which is just superb. Best course history of anyone. And that goes back even further. Like, he always makes the cut here, always finishes like top 20. Outside of that one year in 2011, we actually saw a bunch of bigger names, Zach Johnson, Tony Finau, missed the cut in that 2011 year, so maybe there's some wind or something, I don't know. Even Leishman had kind of a poor performance then, but anyway, CH3, his course history will always make him very chalky here. He's a very known commodity since DraftKings refused to price him correctly last year. This is a more fair price for him at 8,800, 10-1 on FanDuel. And in cash, you're just going to have to either eat the chalk with him or try a pivot onto someone else like Finau or Berger, but I just recommend playing him in cash and getting off of him in GPP. That is just the way to go here. He actually doesn't have a very good course fit whatsoever, and I don't like his efficiency scoring metrics either because he's just like average. But if you look at it closer, he makes a lot of it up in par 5 scoring, 550 to 600 yards, or both of the par 4s, actually, or both of the par 5s, my bad. But the par 5s are really mitigated here, very easy for everyone. If you look at his par 4 scoring, it's not very good. Not very good at all. So I would prefer, in GPP at least, to pivot off of the guy, Charles Howell III. who's going to come in at like maybe like 25% owned if you're lucky, but perhaps more like 30% owned. I mean, it's going to depend on how touted he is, but he could easily work his way up there. I know he doesn't look great as far as odds to pricing goes, but just believe me, he is a known DraftKings commodity, especially when people see him, they go to look at that course history. They'll see this course history, and they will play him. It's simple as that. Daniel Berger is right underneath him. Another possible pivot here. Comes in with much better odds, but his form is meh. I mean, he started off pretty good last week, ended up T11 finish. Wasn't terrible, but finished towards the bottom of the field, the hero. Middle of the field, the WGC. Just barely made the cut and finished very low end at the CJ Cup. I mean, I haven't seen anything from Berger recently, anything really high upside. But he does just make for a solid pivot off of Howell, just based on where he's at in the pricing. And I don't like any of the guys kind of underneath him here. And from this point on, obviously, I can't go through every single golfer in this field, but I'll point out some of the major golfers and really just what you're going to be looking for in the domination station and the research station, which I'm referencing here. Might as well throw a plug out there. Once again, if you do want access to this, just check us out, dfsarmy.com, promo code TACO. Seriously, just come check us out. You can talk to me in our VIP Slack chat. Very informative. Heck, someone just sent me a message there right now. But try to be very helpful. I'm always around. I know I'm very busy this week. Pod's coming out a little bit later because I'm in the middle of moving my house, actually. Just kind of moving down the road, nothing big. But going to a much better house and much cheaper price. Anyway, kind of gone off a little tangent here. So getting back to it, just looking at some of these plays, I don't like many of the guys in the lower $8,000 range. Siwoo Kim, Xander Schauffele, just no form at all and no real upside, I guess. They'll just be low on kind of guys. I know William McGirt has some good short-term form. Some good short-term form from him, a couple of top 10 finishes in a row during the swing season, but I wouldn't be on him at all otherwise. Ollie Schneiderjans is, I don't know if he's going to be popular anymore. He hasn't played in a while, but he's been like a top 25 kind of consistent sort of guy. I could see him being fairly popular, I guess. Game log looks forgiving enough. Statistically, though, I don't really like him much at all compared to a lot of the guys around his range. You've got Bill Haas, who's just been in terrible form, but if you want to just discount what he's done over the swing season, Bill Haas really should be more expensive. Usually he's 10-4 on draft or on FanDuel, but only 8,200 on DraftKings. So if you're gonna play him there. Could see him being very low owned. Jamie Lovemark has some really nice short-term course history here. Finished fourth last year, seventh year before that. All missed cuts before then, but that's when he would come in here as like an amateur. He's a very young guy. Looked really bad last time out at the RSM Classic, finishing towards the bottom of the field, not making the cut. But at the CJ Cup, which was a stronger field than the RSM Classic, I finished fifth at the CJ and had been making cuts before then. He was a guy that had started to gain some steam sort of throughout like the FedEx Cup playoffs and all that, but that kind of died down. And really outside of that finish at the CJ, we haven't seen much from Lovemark, but he's a guy that could kind of strike out of nowhere, and another guy you would kind of want to play on DraftKings a little bit more than FanDuel. So he's also going to be quite overlooked just because of the guy underneath him. A lot of people are going to gravitate towards. This is another super chalky cash play, almost probably right around Charles Howell level, actually. And that would be at $8,000, $9,300 on FanDuel. Ches Reavie finished eighth here last year, has been a top 20 machine throughout the whole last like year, honestly. He doesn't miss cuts. And I guess the best way to explain it to you would just be to read his recent finishes. I'll go all the way back to his last miscut at the AT&T Byron Nelson. Ready? T14, T24, T15, T17, T13, T12, T61, T10, T37, T22, T23, T39, T43, T16, T4, T48. Boom. Cash game play. Dude does not miss cuts. I mean, the course fit, he is kind of, you know, your driving accuracy specialist for sure. And just kind of average at every other stat. Fairly good at approach. Not a birdie or better percentage guy. Really someone that you kind of want to avoid in GPP. But he is really tempting to play because you know he's not going to miss the cut. More likely than not. I mean, he has a very, very good chance of making the cut here. He's made the cut here the last three times he's played in that top 10 last year. I mean, outside of ownership, everything points to Reavie. It's just, I think his ownership is going to be so much higher than like Love, Marcos, Griot, Gay, all the guys around him, that as far as GPP leverage goes, it just makes more sense to go to these other guys. But, you know, if you are a very conservative player and just want to get your guys through the cut, Reavie is the guy for you. I don't like Grillo very much underneath him. Brian Gay could be interesting. He is a very good putter, excellent putter. Very short off of the tee. So his course fit works a lot. I like his course fit. Recent form has been very good for him. Finished third at the RSM Classic, 25th at the OHL, at Mayakoba, and 18th at the Sanderson Farms Classics. Some very, very good short-term form. And we saw him kind of reinvigorate his career last year. He finished 13th here last year. And he had some top five finishes. So Brian Gay is a guy... the odds don't like him very much because I really don't think he's going to win, but he could definitely have some very sneaky top 10 upside. And he's right next to Reavie, who's going to get all that ownership, and sandwiched between another super high ownership guy who we'll talk about here, Gary Woodland, who has perhaps one of the best course fits of anyone despite being known as a bomber. I know we've seen his game over the last few years kind of transformed from being a pure bomber guy to just being an overall ball-striking monster. His green and regulation percentage is one of the best in the field, and his approach also one of the best in the entire field. I think his course fit metric ranks among the best, up there with Leishman and Spieth. If you look at our stat cruncher, almost no matter how you put it, since he's so good with recent form, course history, and course fit, he just pops out of the model like crazy. That course history of his being a T6 last year, T13 the year before that, and a third place finish in 2015. Very, very, very strong play. He's just underpriced by a long shot, but like DraftKings just missed the ball here. FanDuel did it right. They priced him at $10,200, but $7,800 for Gary Woodland is just incorrect. Play him in cash for sure. And you could even mess with him in GPP because he really does score a lot. But for a bomber, he was never one to get many eagles. So this course just works out for him masterfully. And even though he's longer off the tee, he still is a pretty good accurate driver of the ball and can scramble, can pretty much do everything. The guy's a beast. Play him. you don't have to play him. I mean, if you're just looking to pivot off of ownership this week and pray for chaos, then absolutely do it. But if you're just trying to fit the optimal guys in your lineup, Woodland has just been solid over the last year or so, just been a cut-making monster, well, which was not the case with him before. But yeah, Woodland liked a lot, but so was everyone else. Peter Uihlein is someone that statistically it's really hard because he plays on the European Tour mostly. If you look at odds to pricing, he sticks out not nearly as bad as Woodland does, but pretty good. He's like 50-1, surrounded by guys who are like 90 or 100-1, with Woodland being 40-1 there. He just really sticks out. But Uihlein could be popular because he's a known commodity for anyone that plays European Tour golf. They know that he is very, very good. Almost always makes the cut. He's actually American. He just plays overseas in a similar fashion to Brooks Koepka. Last few times we saw him out were at these big no-cut overseas events. At the WGC, we saw him finish 5th and 10th at the CIMB Classic over in China. Last time we saw him stateside, though, he was god-awful, 105th. And that kind of, like, ruins his stats a lot. Like, his, I only have a sample size of 3 on his stats because the WGC, CIMB, those did not have ShotLink data at all. So you kind of want to just ignore a lot of what the sheet is saying here. Like, his efficiency scoring is going to be terrible. Course fit, not looking, or looking pretty bad. His putting was awful because, granted, his putting was just awful at the Safeway Open, just terrible. But yeah, you see a lot of European Tour guys that just aren't that good overseas, but we did see Uline have a few good finishes. I remember he did well at the Shell Houston Open last year, almost won. So he is a guy that, he's going to be a guy to definitely pay attention to moving forward, and this week he's going to make for a stronger play, but he's definitely GPP only. A lot of question marks with him since you don't really know how he's going to play when he's not, or when he's stateside. Moving a bit down the field here, we got a few guys, a few very young guys in a little, in a row here at 7,600 that are all in great form. Patton Kizzire, who we just recently saw hit 3 top 10s in a row, put on an okay T15 finish last week at the Tournament of Champions. He's not anyone I'd be really that interested for or in outside of that form, but you know, that form is what it is. It's pretty good form. Not as good as JJ Spahn, who perhaps has the best recent form of anyone in the field. I finished 2nd at the RSM Classic, and that was after posting a 14th, a 10th, and a 34th in his last 3 events prior to that. So he had pretty much a perfect swing season. Just, that's as good of a swing season as you could ask for, unless you go back to like the year before where I think Nah and Knox had like all top 3 finishes or something crazy like that. So he's coming in hot, but Spahn was someone last year we saw be really up and down, and he just like had like he was riding like a streak of made cuts and then just like hit a brick wall, finished last, and then just missed like 8 cuts in a row or something. Like, he's still very, very young. This is his 2nd year. Missed the cut here last year. So a lot of people that see the game logs are going to be plugging in Spahn. I expect him to be fairly popular. And his stats really aren't bad. Very good green and regulation percentage. Just not a good putter whatsoever. Really bad putter. I kind of like fading him. I like taking, of the 3 guys here, you haven't gotten to the 3rd guy yet, the guy I'd be more inclined to take is Austin Cook. He's the most expensive of them all on FanDuel at 9,700. We saw him win at the RSM Classic over JJ Spahn. And last week he was fairly popular at the Tournament of Champions, and he started off round 1. He was like the leader. fell off just big time. Finished T22. Just not a very good, people that played him last week just have a real, real sense of disappointment from this guy. I'm kind of included in that group here, but still, if you work the stat cruncher, he's going to pop up really high. He only has 4 tournaments of data, but his birdie or better percentage, putting, greens regulation, driving accuracy, all very, very good. And yeah, that's a lot of that slanted because his T50 finish at the OHL Classic didn't have ShotLink data, but his win at the RSM Classic did, stuff like that. You just got to be mindful of that. But he still has several top 20 finishes on the year. He has yet to miss a cut in his very young PGA Tour career. And even the off shots that we saw of him in the last few years, like I had mentioned last podcast, he's been very solid with very high upside. So I'm going to keep going with Cooks. I think he's destined for greatness here. I really do think that. Moving on down the list here, Kevin Na at 7,400 is pretty interesting. Very good course fit because he, like Kevin Kisner, it must be a Kevin thing that they're very, very good at par 4 scoring. You see him pop up on the efficiency scoring metrics. Definitely the best of anyone in this range. The only guy even close to him would be a Mr. Austin Cook. Keegan Bradley at the same price, 7,400. I also like him. He finished 2nd at the CIMB Classic, but we haven't seen him in a couple months, really. Last time we saw him was the CJ Cup. He had a surprisingly consistent season last year. Not what we're used to seeing from him. Just be forewarned, his course history here is pretty bad. Pretty bad. But statistically, he's fine outside of a god-awful putter. Just really bad putter. But that's Keegan for you. Definitely GPP only. Jason Duffner at $7,300. He's going to be very popular. Very popular because if you just look at odds to pricing, it's him and Gary Woodland that are just completely mispriced. He's 45-1. He's surrounded by guys that are well over 100-1. So he sticks out like a sore thumb. Last week, I didn't expect much from him because he was going into last week with four straight no-cut tournaments played, and of all four of them, he finished about dead last. Like, he had god-awful form coming in. Ended up, like, he didn't finish top 10 last week, but he was in the top 10 for quite a while. He was making a charge there. Ended up finishing 11th, but looked pretty solid overall. Duffner, as far as talent-wise, should not be around, you know, your Wesley Bryan, Sean O'Hares, Hudson Swafford, Kelly Kraft, Matt Jones, but he is in pricing, and that's just the reason to take him right there. I don't know if he'll be insanely chalky. Maybe other people will see the form, but and I think just the odds to pricing and the fact that he's $7,300 on DraftKings and $10,900 on FanDuel, I think that people are going to see that, and it's going to make him pop off in a lot of models, especially ones that factor in FanDuel and DraftKings prices. He'll stick out like a sore thumb there. You've also got Kyle Stanley at the same price, who was just terrible last week. If you take last week out of the equation, though, he's been fantastic, and statistically, he's a god. He always has been. His putting hasn't been there, and that's what cost him last week, so I would proceed with caution with Stanley. Just know that his ownership, it was like over 30% last week. Well, it's going to be like maybe 5 to 7% this week. Much better chance of getting you some low-owned Kyle Stanley, and I think he can bounce back for sure and make the cut here, no problem. Hudson Swafford also is the same price, and he's going to be even lower owned. He didn't do much better than Stanley last week. However, his super long driver isn't going to help him out very much at this course. That's the one thing I'm concerned about, but it hasn't mattered for him in the past. He's made three of four cuts here, and all three cuts were T13 or better. So he's flashed some high upside here with his course history, but that's one of the few things he's got going for him. Moving down to the lower $7,000 range, we've got one name that sticks out a ton. Mr. Jimmy Walker, $9,800 on FanDuel, but only $7,200 on DraftKings. It was just a couple years ago that this guy was $13,000 on DraftKings at this event. I shit you not. Even last year, he was $12,000. Missed the cut last year and just had a pretty poor season overall. Ever since winning the PGA Championship, he got diagnosed with Lyme disease, and actually his wife ended up getting Lyme disease as well. So there's a bit of worry and concern with him, but statistically, the guy is great for this course. Awesome approach game, even with his struggles. His approach game is, his numbers just fly off the charts. Good birdie or better percentage. He's always been a good putter. And he's the longer driver with accuracy. I mean, every single statistic of his is in the positives. And we haven't seen him much. He's definitely a risk. But he won here back-to-back in 2015-2014. Fourth place finish in 2011. 13th in 2016. Just had that missed cut last year when he was the chalk. That's really the only concern with Walker. That and the whole, you know, the Lyme disease thing. And he's had some very good finishes even since he's been diagnosed. But just GPP only. Definitely limit your exposure. But you got to have some Jimsta, because he could come back here and win. And that wouldn't be shocking whatsoever. I also like, and it's something you won't see in the efficiency scoring this week, really. But I like how historically he's always been a very good par 3 scorer. And this is a course where par 3 scoring is important. So just another reason to consider Jimmy Walker. Just make sure you have some shares of him. Don't need to go overboard. Just know that he's going to be an important player to consider this week. At $7,100, the only real options are Russell Knox, who I guess has kind of turned his career around a little bit, but I'm still worried about him. And Chris Kirk, who also was just terrible last year after a good season the season before that. Neither of these guys have stats that really stick out, but historically their game has been one that would fit this course very well and just par 70s in general. And finishing off the $7,000 range, the other players I'd kind of be interested in are NCAA champion Aaron Wise, $7,000. Recent finishes of T13 at the RSM, 32nd at the Shriners, 25th at the Sanderson Farms Open. He's a longer driver, and his accuracy, his stroke hand around and approach are not very good at all, but he is a good putter, very solid putter. And we actually have a pretty good sample size on him now at this point. We kind of know what he's about, just someone to maybe throw a few shares at if you're multi-entering. And as for the $6,000 range, it gets pretty sparse from here, but a guy that we were into last week at the bottom of the barrel is still pretty cheap, Ryan Armour at $6,900, $8,100 on FanDuel. He's one of our top projected values here. He got that win at the Sanderson Farms. Started off round one very good at the Tournament of Champions, ended up regressing to a 20th place finish. He has no driving distance to speak of, but is very accurate. Has very good approach around the green statistics, so his course fit looks very good. No course history, since with him being a very young guy and all, but the form is there. He hasn't missed a cut all season long, pretty much. He's just very underpriced, and there's really no one else to pick from. I mean, I guess you could take Wee Kim, who's missed two of two cuts here, only because he's flashed some upside at the Shriners, where he finished second, and the CJ Cup, where he finished fourth. But I think those might have been flashes in the pan for him. Another name I forgot to mention here, $7,100 $7,000 even. Brandon Harkins. Don't know a lot about the guy, to be honest, and statistically he only really sticks out in weird stats, scrambling. I guess birdie or better percentage just because he's put up some decent finishes, but yeah, 9th at the Safeway, 20th at the Shriners, 25th at OHL Classic, just a random 1% owned kind of guy just to throw a share at in your low dollar entries or something. But moving down in the $6,000 range, you've got another good young player, Benjamin Silverman. He's finished 7th at Sanderson Farms and top 50 at the Shriners and Safeway Open. That's all we really know about the guy so far. He is pretty good stats, though. Pretty good at approach, greens regulation, putting, birdie or better percentage, and those are the ones we are looking at for the course fit. So he kind of pops out there. Stuart Sink is a guy that is also going to be fairly popular. He's made 7 of 8 cuts here in the last decade. Pretty good form going all the way back into last year. If you remember last year, he was like a top 25 machine, and we saw him kind of continue that into the swing season. Had one missed cut at the OHL Classic, but other than that, he's pretty much finished top 30 and everything. At $6,800, that is a bargain for sure. And his approach game, with a big sample of 19 tournaments, is among, not the tops, but probably top 10th percentile in this field. So definitely someone to consider, because his approach game has been there and it's been steady for the last year or so. The old man has still got it. Moving down, there's really no one in the $6,700 range there. Maybe Harold Varner III, but he hasn't played in a while. Bryce Garnett has a few decent finishes in a row, but I'm not really about that. Smiley Kaufman is down at $6,600 now. We saw him come fourth at the Sanderson Farms. Other than that, he's been tragically bad. He has no floor. His floor is the middle of the earth, because he'll just finish dead last in a tournament. We saw that here last year. But he's just so cheap, and if you just look at odds to pricing, he sticks out just because his price tag is ridiculous. He's $7,900 on FanDuel, which is also pretty cheap, but $6,600 on DraftKings, that's literally the bottom price there is this week. I wouldn't really consider many people other than him. I guess Michael Thomas finished 20th here last year, 17th most recently at the RSM Classic. Actually some pretty good green and regulation and putting statistics from Thompson. Thompson has always been a very, very good putter. So if you want a low key, like bottom of the barrel option, I kind of like Thompson better than Kaufman. And I know his form has been god awful lately, but he's just someone that strikes out of nowhere for whatever reason. Rory Sabatini. I know his odds are like 230-1, but you know, I mean, if you're playing enough entries in GPP like me, you got to start considering some of these random off guys that could just, you know, nothing crazy. I'd say like there's a hard cutoff of like 300-1. Like if they're 300-1 and worse, you just do not play them because they will lose. They'll not make the cut. But you gotta try to be different somewhere. A lot of people are gonna gravitate to a lot of the same names. You know, your Chez Reavie, Charles Howell III, Gary Woodland. These are going to be the chalk guys. And it's actually going to create a lot of balanced lineups, I think. I don't think people are going to be too thrilled about paying for Harmon, Leishman, Kisner, Zach Johnson at their prices. I mean, I do see Zach Johnson being popular, but really outside of Jordan Spieth and some Justin Thomas, I don't think people are going to be paying up a ton. I think we're going to see a lot of balanced and mid-range lineups, which is not the case from week to week. We usually see more stars and studs, but since there's really only Spieth that's going to be like the super stud worth paying for this week, you're just not going to see that as much. And at the bottom of the barrel, I mean, the bottom price is $6,600, which is fairly high in itself. And, no $6,000 guys like we would see sometimes. But, yeah, people are going to just play a lot more even keel, I think. Going to have more balanced lineups. And perhaps you can do something wacky like put Spieth and Leishman together or something. I don't know. But yeah, try to be different than the field, especially if you're going to take down any of these huge, like 100,000 entry tournaments. But yeah, that pretty much does it for this week. Remember to check us out at dfsarmy.com. Use promo code TACO on sign up for a lifetime 20% off. I will see you guys next week. Have a good one out there. If you need me, contact me in the Slack chat. I'm going to be busy still, but I'll try to get to all of your guys' questions, and expect a projection and ownership projection update sometime tomorrow, around when we post the Vegas odds drift. So keep an ear out for that, and yeah, I will see you guys later. Peace.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA. Weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get 2 free ebooks, as well as The Secrets to Unlocking a New Level to Your Game.